Welcome to This is Palestine. I am Omar Badar.
And I'm Deanna Boutu.
And today, we're looking at the growing tension between Palestinians in the occupied West Bank and the Palestinian Authority. As protests spread in cities like Ramallah, Hebron, and Bethlehem, after Palestinian activist and dissident Nizar Banat was violently arrested by Palestinian security forces and then died in custody, leading to speculation that he was deliberately murdered by the Palestinian security forces. And as protests against the Palestinian Authority ignited, so did the violence of the Palestinian security forces, who proceeded to attack protesters as well as confiscate phones and break cameras in an effort to suppress the images emerging of their violence from spreading. Deanna, I know that many of our listeners know what the PA is, but it might be worth explaining to those who may not fully get how a Palestinian semi-government functions under the ultimate authority of the Israeli occupation. Can you talk about what the PA is?
Sure. Thanks, Omar. The Palestinian Authority was a body, a governing body that was established in the early 1990s following the signing of the Oslo agreements. And what it did, what it is that the Palestinian Authority rules over very small parts of the West Bank and previously the Gaza Strip. Under the Oslo agreements, the West Bank was divided into three different zones: Area A, Area B, and Area C. Area A is the smallest of those areas, and it comprises roughly 18% of the West Bank, including all of the major Palestinian cities like Ramallah, like Bethlehem, like El-Khalil, Hebron, like Tul Kerem, Jenin, and so on. And in those parts of Area A, it's not at all surprising that you see the highest concentration of Palestinians. Roughly 80% of the Palestinian population lives within Area A. Now, under the Oslo agreements, in Area A, this is where the Palestinian Authority can operate. But it's important to note that this isn't one contiguous area. It's divided into a number of small little islands that are disconnected and surrounded entirely by Area C, Area C being the largest part of the West Bank, more than 60% of the West Bank, and that is entirely under Israel's military control. So what the Palestinian Authority can do is very limited. They can provide hospitals in Area A. They can provide schools in Area A only. And they can do small municipal things like collect the garbage, pave the roads within these small areas. But that's about it. Now, the problem is that not only is there very little that they can do, there's then a huge expectation that they're supposed to maintain control and security control over these areas. And under the Oslo agreement, Area A is the only area where the Palestinian Authority has security control, which is to say that Palestinian security forces, including the police, including the paramilitary, operate within these areas. But beyond those areas, the Palestinian Authority simply cannot operate. And for example, to be able to get from one part of Area A to another part of Area A, these Palestinian security forces need Israeli permission. So in effect, all that they are doing is they're a small government that doesn't have the ability to really control anything. For example, they don't have their own currency. They don't have the ability to control fiscal policy. There's no control over the airspace. There's no control over Palestinian waters. There's no control over any of the borders. So in effect, it's the equivalent of having a small municipal or city government within a larger state.
Just to reiterate what you're describing, all of the West Bank is under Israeli military occupation, and an illegal occupation, by the way. But within the Israeli-occupied West Bank, there are small bits that are known as Area A, where the overwhelming majority of Palestinians are concentrated, and those are the areas where the Israeli occupation passed on security responsibilities for directly policing Palestinians to the Palestinian Authority.
Correct. That's exactly correct.
So by no means can anyone think of the PA as a government, because they function exclusively within the confines of what the Israeli occupation allows them to do.
Well, it's even beyond that. Not only can we not think of them as a government, the Oslo agreements specifically say that this isn't a state and shouldn't be thought of in any way as a government. And it spells it out very clearly. So, for example, under the Oslo agreements, the Palestinian Authority isn't to have a foreign minister. Under the Oslo agreements, the Palestinian Authority cannot even arrest an Israeli. So, for example, if an Israeli comes into Area A, commits a crime, including murder, the Palestinian Authority has no ability to even arrest that Israeli. All that they can do is simply hand over the person to the Israelis, and that's it. And so you're really functionally talking about an area where all that the Palestinian Authority can do is control its own people. And this is precisely what the Israelis wanted. They got tired of being in security control over the lives of people, but they certainly wanted to continue to control land and territory and water and resources. And so they handed over the control of people, 80% of them, to the Palestinian Authority to serve effectively as the police force for the Israeli military occupation.
So let's talk about the incident that triggered the latest protests. I'll admit that I did not know much about Nizar Banat until news of his death in PA custody emerged. Who was he?
Nizar Banat was a Palestinian activist who was based in Khalil, in Hebron, and who had a very large Facebook following, something to the tune of about over 100,000 people who were following him. And it's not at all uncommon for dissidents of the Palestinian Authority to have large followings. In fact, this is often the way that people are able to assess just how popular or how unpopular the Palestinian Authority is. He wasn't just a dissident. He would often write about what was going on with the Palestinian Authority. He often wrote about, as he put it, the Dayton forces. He used to call the Palestinian Authority the Dayton forces because they had received so much money from the Americans, in particular General Dayton. And so he wrote often on Facebook about his critique of the Palestinian Authority. He also was going to run in the parliamentary elections that were supposed to take place on May the 22nd, but were canceled. He was number two under a party that was called the Freedom and Dignity Party. And when those elections were canceled, he had gone to and initiated a case, said he was going to initiate a case before the European Court of Human Rights, demanding that these elections take place or demanding that the Europeans stop providing funding to the Palestinian Authority. So in short, he was somebody who was vocal about his critique of the PA. He had a significant following, and he wasn't afraid to come out and say that the Palestinian Authority was operating on Israel's behalf. He wasn't afraid to say that they were working on behalf of the United States, and he definitely wanted to see a better future for Palestinians.
And to call his death suspicious is a bit of an understatement. I mean, we have a reasonably good idea of what happened here, given how violent his arrest was, right?
Yes, we've seen video as he's being taken out from his home at 3 o'clock in the morning. We see video of him being hit as he's being taken out at 3 o'clock in the morning, and he ends up dying a few hours later after receiving blows to the head. It's not at all suspicious. It's clear that he was killed. He didn't just magically die.
I suppose the reasonable range of possibility goes from he was deliberately murdered to, at the very least, he was accidentally killed while he was being brutalized. So, in no plausible scenario are the security forces' hands clean here. And while the killing was the spark of these protests, there is a lot of underlying frustration with the PA that has been building for many years, right?
Oh, definitely. And not only is there a longstanding frustration, there's longstanding repression of any dissent against the Palestinian Authority. Look, for years and years and years, we've seen the dissent expressed in media, and then Mahmoud Abbas turns around and shuts down that media. We've seen dissent expressed on the streets, and again, protests get shut down on those streets. We've seen dissent expressed through people leaving Fatah and joining other political parties, and we also see the response by the Palestinian Authority, where these people are labeled traitors and so on. And so there's been a lot of frustration with the Palestinian Authority. The last public opinion poll before Israel's attack on Gaza was showing that Mahmoud Abbas was not going to win the upcoming elections, that Fatah was not going to win the upcoming elections. And this was probably the reason that these elections ended up being canceled, that he canceled the elections. And even before that, we've seen numbers as high as 66% of Palestinians saying that Mahmoud Abbas should resign. I mean, this has been a long-standing, long-growing line of dissent. And alongside that growing dissent, there has been constant repression on the part of the Palestinian Authority, including now. For example, just today, we learned of the dismissal of Ihab Ibseso from the National Archives. Now, Ihab Ibseso was the former Minister of Culture, somebody who was often seen praising Mahmoud Abbas, who served in the government under Rami Hamdullah, the most recent government under Rami Hamdullah. And after the Hamdullah government fell, he was given the post of taking over the National Archives. And just today, after he posted a post on Facebook critical of and actually condemning the killing of Nizar Banat, he was also magically dismissed. This is the way that the Palestinian Authority operates, Omar. If you do anything or say anything against them, they find ways to crack down and exact their revenge.
So there's nothing surprising about the repression that we're witnessing, but what about the broader Palestinian political scene? How are other parties and actors responding to this moment?
It's causing some waves, to put it mildly. You know, to speak about the repression is important. And we've seen over the years the tactics that this government, and in particular Mahmoud Abbas, has used against people who are dissidents. So, for example, the beatings that we've seen Palestinian journalists, all of whom are female, the ones who've received beatings, that's not at all unusual. You know, I can give you just a personal story, Omar. A few years ago, when I wrote an opinion piece calling for the Palestinian Authority to be dismantled, because it should be dismantled, the person who is privileged, ended up receiving death threats on a daily basis. I became persona non grata. My car was vandalized. It got to the point where people were warning me that I shouldn't be living in the West Bank any longer. And that was me, somebody who is privileged. You can imagine what they do to people who don't have that level of privilege. You can just imagine.
Yeah, who aren't on CNN or have Canadian citizenship.
Who don't have a foreign passport. Exactly. That was exactly it. So I have a foreign passport. And so you can just imagine what happens to other people. And similarly, when all of this was happening, one of the lines that they used against me, which is the same line that they use against all of the people who are protesting, is that we were carrying foreign agendas, so to speak. That was exactly the word that they use, agendat ajnabi, foreign agendas. In my case, they also claimed that I was carrying an Israeli agenda because I happen to have a citizenship because I'm a Palestinian with Israeli citizenship. And that's what they do, is they smear you. And so the reaction from other political parties has been interesting because we've already seen that the People's Party has pulled out of the government. There is talk of other political parties also pulling out of the government, but that's not enough. There needs to be more action to show this government that they can't continue with complete impunity. You know, Mahmoud Abbas now, if you look at what it is that he controls everything in the West Bank. And this isn't an exaggeration. He controls the courts and the judicial system. He controls the security and all of the security apparatuses. He has cracked down on the media. He has cracked down on NGOs that are opposed. He's even cracked down on, as you've seen, private individuals who come out and speak against what's happening. And so this is not at all something that should be tolerated. And this is why you see that there are calls now by individuals saying that the Europeans should cut off their funding to the Palestinian Authority, with the Europeans responding saying that their funds don't go to these security forces, but instead they go to what's called the blue police, the regular police. But it's all effectively the same and the same system.
You mentioned that you were personally smeared as working on behalf of an Israeli agenda, which is unimaginably ridiculous, given that you were protesting collaboration with Israel's agenda. So while I'm sure that the threats must have been incredibly difficult for you and for your family, certainly the smears wouldn't pass the smell test for anyone with a functioning brain, so I guess there's always that. But there are many who once called for the dismantling of the PA, and now Mahmoud Abbas is old and his health isn't great, and he's not really grooming anyone to replace him. I know that speculating about the future is hard, but can you talk about the possibilities of what comes next?
Omar, this is the problem. We just don't know. You know, it's interesting. Back in 2002, 2003, and early 2004, this was a question that I was asked very often. What's going to happen when Arafat dies? And at the time, I remember scoffing and responding and saying, we know what's going to happen. There's going to, the Speaker of the House will take over for this prescribed period, and then we're going to have elections, and we're going to choose a new president. That's what's going to happen. And people were saying, no, there's no way that it's going to be so peaceful. And with Mahmoud Abbas, the problem is we just don't even know what the system is this time around. And the reason we don't know is we don't have a legislative council. He dismissed the legislative council a long time ago and announced that the Speaker of the Legislative Council, the Speaker of the House, is no longer Speaker of the House. So it's not going to go to that individual. And we've never seen any form of elections, including primaries or including within Fatah itself. And so again, it's not clear what's going to happen on that level either. So this is the major problem, is that he hasn't even set up a system to be able to pass the baton, because he's created a system in which he wants everyone to believe that he is the only person who can be in control. He's the only one who can be in charge. And that's why this part is so terrifying for many people, is that we just don't know what's going to happen.
There is indeed a lot of uncertainty about where we go from here, but one thing is certain, and it's that the Israeli occupation is not the only layer of oppression that Palestinians live under, and that the struggle for justice entails confronting all systems of oppression. Diana, thank you so much for having this conversation. It was very enlightening.
Thank you, Omar. Thank you for listening to This is Palestine, a podcast brought to you by the Institute for Middle East Understanding. The IMEU is a nonprofit focused on giving you access to untold stories, facts, and expert sources on all things Palestine. For more information, please visit our website at www.imeu.org and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at the IMEU. Please don't forget to subscribe. I'm Deanna Butu. Thanks for listening.